Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello, Weirdsville. Thank you once again for listening to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. That's what you're listening to right now. This is the voice of one of your co-hosts, Adam Beebe. That's me. And I am here today with my other co-host, Barry Johnston.
Hey, everyone. How are you?
And also, we are joined with our special correspondent, resident Bigfoot expert, and occasional, and more frequently, which has been very nice, co-host Jeff Hubbard.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We today are taking a break from the weird. We are going to be honoring the men who progenerated us. This is our Father's Day special, and we've got some great stories about our dads. They're funny. They are pretty cool. Mostly are about Barry's dad, Kurt, who is just a huge character and just has a lot of great stories. So
we tried to fit him in as much as we, as many stories as we could, but no, we just wanted to celebrate a little bit and talk a little bit about the folks that reared us.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing to me, you know, when you're a kid or whatever, you never really imagine yourself growing up and being like your parents. But, you know, my dad has an achy back. Now I have an achy back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just little Dennis now. I'm little Dennis Jr. Yeah. And every day I just pick up, you know, all these ailments that I've watched him go through my whole life and all those little things. You know, it's coming around full circle.
It's true, man. So true. Mm-hmm. So true. You find yourself saying the things that your dad used to say to you, to your kid, you know, and you're just like, what is going on here? Full circle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, that's so true.
Yeah. Being a father is a special thing, and having a great father and a mentor, you know, we were all lucky to have people in our lives that cared about us and try to pay that forward a little bit, you know?
Yep. And we all had dads of distinction. You know, they all had great character, but were also great characters. And so, you know, so that's what we're here to. We're going to share some of those stories for you because, you know, we really appreciate our dads and our moms, of course, as you heard before on the Mother's Day special. It seems like you've always got more dad stories because dads tend to do more stupid things. So I can only imagine what your kids are going to say about you guys.
Oh, believe me, there's going to be plenty to
tell. You know, and fortunately, I have cats, and they don't really talk too much. So, you know. So let's get to it. Here's our dad stories.
So I'll start off by, you know, sort of explaining a little bit to the people about my dad. He's got an entrepreneur's heart and always has. I mean, since the time he was a kid, he used to put on this. It was an annual event every year in Enid, America, called the Fox Hunt. And you'd pony up a dollar or two, you know, whatever it was, and the whole thing was. Is my dad would get a little bit of a head start, and then you'd have to catch him. And so, like, and he's a fairly agile, huh? How old was he? This is like, he's probably 10, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 10, 12. He's young. you know, middle school days. And and he always prided himself of the fact that nobody was ever able to catch him, you know. But my dad has a strong Clark Griswold gene you know, and it's so it just seems like, you know, the funny always makes its way in there somewhere, you know. One year he hung his nut sack on a fence, and so they had to take him into the emergency room to get sewn up, which is not the last time that something like that would happen. But he's always accident prone. You know what I mean? Yeah. He just follows him around like a plague. You know, so he fell out of a tree when he was a young kid. Well, first he got kicked by a horse when he was young, man, and I mean knocked him out. You know. And then he fell out of a tree, broke his arm, and he fell out of a tree, and he got tired of the cast, and so he cut it off, like, you know, like a couple of weeks into this thing, you know? So, like, so his arm only bends to, like, you know, probably, like, maybe 45 degrees or so, you know? So he doesn't have full use of his arm, but, But yeah, so that's just, you know, that's just my dad, you know. So,
dad.
But one of the more prevalent stories that we always talk about is one year when I was I had to have been maybe fifth grade, something like that. My mom and dad were in the city and they were doing Christmas shopping, and they're at the mall, and they go into, I think it was Sears or. It was a place that sold, you know, like treadmills, but then you could get, you know, TVs and whatever. And so they're looking around. And this is when, like, electric treadmills were just sort of, like, becoming, like, popular, mm-hmm. where people would buy them in their homes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so my dad steps on one, and he turns it on, and he jacks up the speed. He doesn't know what he's doing, you know? So he jacks up the speed. And that thing, it, you know, there's a little bit of a pause between the, you know, when you turn it on, you jack the speed up, and then it starts going, and the thing fucking shoots him off the back of this thing, and he goes and collides into these other treadmills that are sitting there. Everybody in the store, he makes a huge ruckus. Everybody in the store is turning and looking at what's going on. My mom is like over, like on another aisle, and she hears it go down, and she runs over there. And, you know, of course, everybody started laughing, you know, just typical, man. Typical.
Yeah. your dad is, I mean, he's every bit, he's got the Clark Griswold in him. He's also got a bit of the Jim Carrey from Dumb and Dumber.
Exactly. He was, and he's just tough, man. I mean, like. Yeah. When I was about,
he's gotta be.
After what's that boy? You know, the boy named Sue, like song. Yeah. Like I always think about, like, you know, he just sort of like he's tough because he's gotta be. You know, because sometimes he doesn't think things through. You know, but one time to go back when I was about 5 years old at this time. I don't know if you remember this, Adam, but we went fishing and it was like 4:30 in the morning before the sun came up, and it's like one of my earliest memories of fishing with my dad, and he takes us out. We're at Lake Texoma. We go and we jump in the boat, and he goes to put the motor down, and when he did that, it was you had to hold the motor to where it wouldn't slip down, and then pull a clip. And then set the motor down. Well, he didn't do that. And when he pulled the clip, it took the end of his finger off. It cut it off. Mm. And I never heard my dad curse unless he was like super angry, you know, or something. But he yelled "fuck," you know. And I remember that like to this day. It's just the whole scene is embedded in my head. So he's holding his finger and he turns around and there's just blood. You know, just shooting out his finger. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. You know, I'm like, he takes his flannel. He had a flannel t-shirt. He takes it off and he wraps the whole thing around his finger in about like less than a minute, dude. It was soaked. And so he takes me and we get off the boat and we jump into the car. I'm 5 years old, dude. He sets me on his lap and I drive up to the cabin. And I don't know what I was doing, but we made it there. Ooh, we made it there. And then we go to my mom, of course, you know, we jump into the car and we run to the Medill, the emergency room. And this is like, you know, these people aren't sophisticated. This is not like going to go well. You know what I mean? Like it's just, it's bare knuckle, you know, emergency room situation. So we go in
this,
there.
In this case, it really is bare knuckle.
For sure.
I mean, literally, sure. Literally, and it's bare knuckle.
less one digit. So the way that it took his finger off, the bone was protruding outside further than where the skin was. And so they had to file the bone down. And the nurse that was there was this big dude with a flat top haircut, just big burly guy, right? They couldn't numb it, dude. And I just remember being outside that emergency room and hearing my dad scream in pain as they're like filing that fucking thing down, man.
Oh God.
So they got the finger sewed up and everything. And that thing, dude, when it healed, it was harder than a piece of steel, dude. And that became his weapon for me. So, like, when I would screw up, man, if I did something wrong, he'd take that finger, dude, and just put it into my chest, man, poke me in my chest. So it became his weapon of choice, man. So, yeah.
That's hilarious. That's
so, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, now I want to let you finish. I was going to see.
No. Yeah.
Did you guys go back to the boat and fish?
No, man. No, that put an end to that. He was laid out for a couple of days for that, man. But dude,
you know, I had heard that story before, but I thought you were older. I thought you were more around like 13.
No, I was young, dude.
It's a wonder that your mom didn't become a nurse. Just by the sheer amount of things that your dad had,
my mother is a saint, dude.
Yeah, she is.
She's put up with a lot.
Who Johnston is a saint?
I remember he fell off a ladder this is probably what you're thinking of, man. When we were in middle school, they came and got me out of class because my dad had an accident and he was working in the grain warehouse, and he was up on a huge ladder, and he was cleaning the top of the bin, which was probably, I'm going to say, 20 feet, 25 feet. And there was a guy at the bottom holding the ladder, and the phone rang, and the guy went to go get the phone, and the ladder slipped, and he freaking hit his head, man. He hit his head so hard he had seed embedded into his forehead.
Jesus.
And knocked him out, man. And he was unconscious and, like, it rattled him pretty good, man. But
I don't remember
yeah,
that one.
Yeah, that one was pretty bad. But he ended up being fine from that. So accidents aside, this is something in the later years that's happened that is just absolutely hysterical. So there's this some random guy one day about 5 or 6 years ago calls my dad, right? And he's going on and on and on, and he's talking to my dad like he's known him forever. And my dad being the nice, you know, jovial, you know, conversationalist that he is, he just continues talking to this guy like they've known each other forever. And this guy's like, oh, my dad loved you so much, and yada, yada, yada. Have this great conversation. Well, so they hang up, and the guy keeps calling back. And it's been 5 or 6 years, dude. He has no idea who this guy is. And every time he calls, they have long conversations about shit that my dad has no idea what he's talking about, but he just keeps this thing going, dude. And about like 2 years ago, the guy goes, hey, I'm going to be up in Enid. I got some stuff, like he's going to be up here doing something. And I was just waiting for the, like, how are you going to know who he is? Like, you know, like, what is that going to be like when you finally meet him? But it ended up never happening. But the conversations still, the phone conversations still happen, man.
To this day.
To this day. He talks to him about once a week, dude. Yeah. And like,
it's amazing.
And he, like, he counsels him and his wife on marriage and stuff. Oh, and my, like,
God, that's your dad.
How great is that?
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Awesome. I hadn't heard that. That's amazing.
Yeah, dude.
And
that's
such your dad, dude. Your dad is just that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Who is he to bust this guy's bubble? You know, it's just like he just continues this. This thing, it's a running joke, but
that's so good, dude.
Yeah, yeah. So,
well, Barry, how about the time that your dad was in the rattlesnake hunt that made the news?
Yeah. They were in high school.
This is one of my favorite. Yeah. This is one of my favorite.
They were in high school, and he and his friends wanted to get on the news, and so they decide they're going to go out to the Okeen rattlesnake hunt, and they go out there, and they're looking for snakes, but. Of course, they don't find any, but there's a helicopter overhead that's doing that for the news. You know, they're doing the footage. So they're like, hey, everybody act like we got a snake. So they all crowd around and they're all like poking this thing. And they're like, you know, making it look like they've got something. And they made it onto the news because they thought that they were getting a snake. So they got a little clip of them on the news, man.
And that was back in the 60s, man,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the crew of guys that my dad ran with, man, were just all hilarious, and just growing up with them and having them a part of my life was just incredible, dude. And sadly, we've lost some of them in the last few years, but I mean, the stories, you know, are endless. And every time that we would get together with his friends, they would always, you know, tell me stories about my dad, and you know, it's just. It's an amazing thing to be a part of. My dad casts a large shadow, you know, and as a young man trying to get out of that, it was very difficult. But now I just embrace it for what it is, man. You know, he's one of a kind for sure, you know.
Yeah, for sure, man. And there's hundreds of Kurt stories. Hundreds. You know. And like I'm trying to think some of the other ones that I know of. There was a time. Oh, the time he was in the payphone booth, talking to your mom.
Yeah, what is that?
And then the phone call just dropped. Your mom told me this one. Okay. I remember hearing this one.
Jog my memory.
I'll jog your memory. Okay. So your mom. I remember your mom telling me this. She was in high school, and they've been dating, and he called her from a payphone, because this is back in the day, before cell phones, of course, and when you had a payphone, glass box payphone on the corners,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So he gets in the corner, payphone, and he's sitting there, you know, and he's talking to your mom, and they're having a normal conversation, and all of a sudden, he stops talking like mid-sentence, and then there's this huge crashing sound, and the phone goes dead. And your mom's like, what the, you know, what was that? You know, so come to find out that your dad was sitting there talking on the phone, and one of his friends thought it'd be a funny joke to run his car at the payphone box, but he didn't quite break in time, and so your dad dropped the phone to dive out of the way while his buddy plowed right through the phone box.
I mean, that's typical. I mean, that's typical, man. He had a friend, and they called him Barney from
Andy Griffith
show. Yeah. Because he was Barney. I mean, you know, the guy was just always, like, doing crazy shit, dumb shit. But his car, he was sitting at a red light. And he had this old car, you know, he was in high school, and his parents bought him this old piece of junk car. He's sitting at a red light, and the freaking engine drops on the ground. And, like, just just drops on the ground. I mean, one minute he's driving, and the next minute the engine's sitting on the ground, you know, like shit like that, man. It's like, God damn. He's the same friend that he went out on a date. He took his like girlfriend, like the first night that they were out on a date, he's trying to impress her and stuff, you know. He goes out to his car and he has a long coat on. And when he went to go shut the door to his car, he locked the keys in the car, and he shut the coat in the car, and so he couldn't get out of the car, and so he ended up having to take his jacket off and leaving it there till they could get the keys out of the car. So, you know, dude, good fun. Good fun.
I remember another one about your dad, probably around the same time period. I think it was like either. I think it was early on when he was dating your mom, and he just bought a pickup, I think.
Yeah.
With the bed
in the back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He shows up to go pick my mom up. I think this is like their first date, maybe second date. Like he hadn't been dating her very long. And he bought this pickup, and it had a mattress in the back. And my dad was not thinking about that at all. Like he was proud of this truck and he wanted to show it off to my grandfather, my mom's dad. So he goes inside and he says, B, I want to show you my truck. And they go outside and they're looking at it and they start walking around the back of the truck. And he looks at my dad and he says, Curtis, what's this mattress doing in the back? And my dad was like, oh my God, that came with the truck, man. That was not, that was not put in there by me. So yeah. Yeah. Oh man. But there's hundreds of stories, man.
Hundreds, man.
Could go on for days, but
have you got any good dentist stories, man?
Man, I was trying to think about some good dentist stories. My dad wasn't a real humor. He's not a real humorous guy. not a lot of funny stories. How's that possible?
So where'd you get your humor from, Hub?
You know, I don't know. I think my humor came as a kind of a way to survive, kind of a survival mechanism.
Okay.
You know, I was always a little smaller, you know, in school my humor, I think, was just kind of a necessity to just kind of a way I cope with things.
Yeah. Right.
That's where my humor comes from.
Yeah.
Well, Dennis isn't completely humorous because I've heard him say some funny shit sometimes. But it's few and far between because he is pretty quiet. But he also is he's kind of like the quiet version of like Al Bundy. We used to call him Al Bundy.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. Because
okay. He would come home. He would come home, and I've witnessed this, and Jeff was telling us about it, and then I saw it a lot as well. He would come home, and he would, undo his pants, stick his hand down, and sit down in his chair and watch TV. I mean, and that's where it would be. For hours.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then not only that, yeah, he'd have his, you know, just like Al Bundy, hand down the front of his pants. Yep. But not only that, you know, he'd be reclined in his lazy boy, and he would have a pile of whatever snack it was, like a pile of chips, just sitting on his chest on his white V-neck shirt, just eating those.
Oh, that's great.
As he watched.
That's great. Dude. That's hilarious.
Dennis also, I don't know, you know how in the Christmas story, that movie, A Christmas Story, where, the kid is outside, his dad is changing the tire, and he says that his father worked in profanity.
Yeah. Yes.
My dad was the same way. I mean, and as I've gotten older, I'm just like my dad, man.
Yeah,
I'm just like my dad. I'll be doing something, you know, and I'm trying to put something together, and there's like a, you know what, a 16th of an inch and it just won't fit. Yeah. And it just won't go.
Yeah.
You know?
You gotta curse it into submission, dude.
Right.
Motherfucker. It's so true. Motherfucker.
Yeah. And you get extra strength or whatever, you know. And my dad's really good. My dad's really good with cars, you know. He had a couple of GTOs.
Okay.
You know, I think he had one in high school and
nice.
He had one in college, and so he knows his way around vehicles. And one of the funniest things he ever said was, I think we were changing the oil in the Jimmy, the old 85.
Yeah.
And we were out there, and I don't think we could get the filter off. And I mean, you know, he's struggling with it. And then just out of nowhere, he's like, "Well, kiss my pussy." Shit.
That's great. Teaching you new curse words.
I love it. I know your mom, who is also a saint, would be Dennis. She'd just be Dennis, you know?
Right. There was a time in my life too when I thought my first name, God damn it, and my last name was Jeff, because I got a lot of God damn it,
yeah,
Jeff.
Yeah. That's funny, man.
Was one of those times whenever you accidentally set the park on fire by your house?
I told mom about that. I don't know if dad.
How did that happen? What the fuck happened you there?
Kind of an interesting story. It was winter time. It was winter time, and it was me, Cy Smith, Jesse Smith, and I think Gary Toole.
Okay.
And we had started this game where, you know, we'd have a book of matches or whatever. And one guy was kind of like Johnny Appleseed, right? He'd just go around with the book of matches, and he'd light the match and throw it into the grass, you know,
okay.
Which was all dead. And then we'd let him light a couple, you know, matches and drop them. And then we'd run along behind him and stomp them out. Well,
classic childhood game. Classic childhood game.
Absolutely.
So we're having a hell of a time. And I don't know who was throwing the matches out on this particular occasion, but they were going off, you know, just fucking throwing matches right and left, and we're coming along stomping them out, and he got done, and we're all like out of breath, and we're over there laughing about it all, you know. And then all of a sudden somebody realized that we had forgot to put one out. And I don't know, it was probably, by the time we got over there, it was probably like 6 foot, maybe 8 foot in diameter. Mm-hmm. And then it just started growing from there, and it was growing in all directions. And so everybody's over there trying to stomp it, and the flames are getting pretty big. And so, you know, I'd taken my coat off. I had a heavy coat, you know. I think it was like that burnt orange and like a tan and maybe a gray color.
Classic 70s.
Yeah, definitely. Ski so coat, I'm probably. On my coat. And so I run and grab my coat, and I'm just kind of like, I'm freaking out. So I hand it to Tool. And Tool just takes it, and he just starts fighting the fire with that coat, just putting it out. We got that shit out, and we ran down the alley, and we're like, holy shit, man, I hope nobody saw that shit. And we're just kind of feeling, we're thinking about it, and finally we're like, okay, I think we're cool. So, like, I hide my coat, and I go home, and for some reason, I mean, the door to our house was never locked. You know, if somebody was there, it was open. But for some reason this day, the door was locked. So I had to ring the doorbell, you know, and I think I probably had a plan.
Yeah.
You know, if anybody asked any questions or whatever, but as soon as my mom opened the door, I just started bawling.
I was like, yeah.
We were playing this game, and we lit the park on fire, and my coat's burned. And she's like, well, get your coat. And so I got the coat, and she was able to clean it up. And like the inside had like this faux, like, you know, sheep's wool lining or whatever, like a And she was able, it was kind of like, you know, singed, and she was able to cut that off, and she washed the coat, and the coat was still wearable, and we never got in any trouble, but yeah,
that's awesome.
That was a that was pretty scary.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Man, you know, sometimes when you're doing stupid shit like that, and then, like, it gets out of control, and you're like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? Like, we're fucking just a bunch of young kids that are just jerking around here, you know? It's like, because back then, like, at least in my home, if you fucked up, you're going to get a hand when you get home, man. You know what I mean? So, you know, it was, you got double the... you know, double the payback, I guess.
But,
Man, the thing, when I'm just thinking about Adam's dad, like the things that I think about when I think about Adam's dad, I think about his voice and how he used to just, Adam! You know?
My dad could get loud.
Oh, he could get
loud. My dad could get really loud. And all he, I mean, him just yelling would be enough to just... You know,
scare the shit out of you.
Wet your pants, for sure.
Yeah.
And by the way, I was a fairly well-behaved kid simply because of that.
Right.
But, you know, and I mean, I probably got a spanking probably maybe a dozen times, if not less, you know, in my life.
Yeah.
And that had to be from royally, you know, screwing up. But, you know, and my dad was like, he always, every single time he explained it, you know, how, you know, it hurt him more than it did me. And of course, you're as a kid, you don't understand that, but as an adult, you're just like, wow, yeah, I get that, you know, because like, you know, and he did it because that's the way he was brought up to do. And he wasn't abusing us by any means.
No.
And, you know, and he would do it, you know, and if Barry, you were over there and you're part of the trouble and you deserved it, he would spank you too.
He was an equal opportunity spanker.
He wasn't like, I'm going to let your parents deal with it.
Right.
No, he, you know, and of course he knew your parents very well. I mean, so it's, you know, he'd take care of you. Just as much as needed.
So I spent a lot of time over at Adam's house, you know, growing up. And I remember there being donuts all the time. Like every morning we woke up, your dad would go to Daylight Donuts and get donuts. And that's where I fell in love with the chocolate twist and the Long Johns.
Hell yeah.
Those were the best donuts, too.
Dude,
Daylight Donuts.
So good. Jeez. So good. And spaghetti. Dude, I loved your dad's spaghetti, and I couldn't figure out why I loved it so much, and then I discovered it about 15 years ago, man.
What's that?
You put butter on the noodles. You butter the noodles, man.
That's right.
You know? I mean, that was the best, man. The best. But
yeah, dude.
But yeah, your dad was he was a bear of a man. He was a big guy.
Big dude.
And
strong,
strong guy.
Hell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, he'd spank you 1 minute, but then the next minute he'd make sure that you got your cough medicine or that you're taken care of. Yeah. He was just a great human being. One of my favorite people of all time, you know?
I appreciate that, you know, and I mean, I am aware of how fortunate I was to have my dad be my dad, you know, and that was such a, you know, a blessing, you know, that he was, you know, that's who he was. And he passed away when I was 17. And, you know, that was a tough loss. And just before I turned 18, just before we graduated high school. And, you know, I miss him. I wish that I would have had a chance to go to him for guidance later on in life. But at the same time, all the values that, you know, he instilled in how he raised me really shaped me into the person I am. And I've only, you know, I mean, I've still, you know, fucked up a few times here in life. We all do. But I think that a lot of the reason that I'm able to kind of keep on the straight and narrow for the most part and know how to treat people. And that's another thing, know how to treat people and be, you know, that I all got from him. So if I'm half the man that he was, you know, I'm going to be turned out a good man. So yeah,
absolutely.
That's what I always say.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you a story about my dad. And I, this one that happened, I was so, I don't even know if I was born when this happened. I've got a couple of my dad stories to share. But one of them, you're talking about how strong he was, how big and strong he was. I want to say this happened like in 1978, but it could have happened in like 75 or something. But my dad was driving back from Oklahoma City, and I think he was on a country road, or he was on a less traveled road. But there was a it was a four-way stop, and he came over the hill, and or maybe it might not, it may not have been a four-way stop, but he came over the hill, and he didn't. That's right. He didn't have a stop sign. He came over the hill, and he didn't have a stop sign there, and there was a car that ran through a stop sign at the crossing, and so they hit like right in front.
Yeah.
And my dad saw it coming, so he braced himself, because this is back before airbags, and he was in a big station wagon.
Could have been before real good seat belts also, you know.
Oh, probably was. He probably wasn't wearing a seat belt. Yeah. But my dad like saw that this was happening. He braced himself and he clamped his hands down on the steering wheel, and he went so hard in on the steering wheel that he collapsed the steering wheel. He bent it in.
Damn. Wow.
And held on to it. And because he did that, he didn't fly through the front. He didn't fight. You know, he was able to be, he walked out of it with like maybe just a bump or so on of it.
Yeah.
And maybe a little bit of a sore neck, but he didn't. And the other people were fucked up. Like they, you know, there may have been somebody that died, and I can't remember. I had to ask I had to get a better story, better version from my brother. But yeah, he crushed that steering wheel. And by, you know, and that saved his life because he was so strong. And he was so strong because he grew up on a farm back in the day. And his summer job was, you know, he went out and he worked the harvest, the wheat harvest and stuff, you know, and they would travel around. And, you know, so he'd be like 15 years old traveling with, you know, his cousins and some other people. And they've been he would throw those big hay bales.
Yep.
You know, which are like probably what, like 50, 75 pounds, if not more.
They're
heavy.
Yeah.
And he'd pick them up and he would toss them, and you would toss them to somebody who was on the truck who would catch it and put it down. Right. And you would toss that thing probably about 10 feet off the ground into the air over to the truck easily.
Yeah.
And that's what you do over and over and over again. So my dad's arms were like just massive, you know. He was massive. And he was a big guy, big barrel chested guy, and a big belly, you know. But he was just incredibly strong. But he was just the meekest person that you would meet.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I remember helping your family going out. Not that we helped, but we'd go out for wheat harvest and hang out while they'd. We'd usually, I remember hanging out in the back of the wheat truck when they would dump the wheat in there, and we'd play in the back of the wheat truck with the grain, you know, like, I mean, just, you know, I mean, that's just the way it was, you know. Unfortunately, that way of life is really going away here. You know, a lot of the young kids don't want to be involved in the farm, and a lot of the major corporate, you know, folks are taking that over. The Wheaties come down every year and do the harvest, where it used to be a family affair. You know, the whole family would go out, and you know, you'd work day and night, and they'd work 24/7 to get that stuff cut down, you know. And I remember that, you know, going to your family's house in Marshall, and that old dirt bike that your brother had that we would take out. Your dad would let us ride it around in the fields and stuff.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, dude. That little 100.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Man.
Yep.
Yeah. We ride that around. And then you had one of those fat tires.
Yeah. The big wheel
tire.
Yep.
We'd ride around by your house all the time. God, that was so much fun.
Yeah.
I remember one time your sister was on your big wheel and she was going down, and there was like there in front of your house were those ditches, you know, and then the ditches would go up, and then you would have a kind of, they go up where, and then there's a little bit of a hill ramp to the driveway and then go back down into the ditch, you know, and there was like a, you know, like a little, passageway for water to go through. And we would go up, and you had to slow down because you went too fast, man. You'd ramp right up.
Right.
Of course, we wanted to do that a little bit.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But we couldn't do it too much because, you know, one, we get in trouble, but also right. It was extremely dangerous. And right. Even though we were little and aware, and I don't even know if we wore helmets, but I think we probably did. Yeah. But I'm sure they weren't very useful. They weren't great. But you know,
yeah.
But I remember one time we were out there, your sister Jamie's driving, and she comes up and she hits that. She's going up right in front of your house, and she hits the up ramp on one side, and she goes, she catches air, man. Yeah. And we're like, whoa. And then she turns flat, you know, straight in the air.
Yeah.
And it's flat as a tabletop over on the side. And then she just comes straight down. And we're like, whoa. And like everybody just runs. And she was fine. She went knocked out of her and all that stuff, but she was fine. But that was, I just remember that.
Fun stuff, man. Fun stuff. I can't believe we got it. Like, when I think back on those times, sometimes, like, going out to Julian Ludwig's house and just going out for hours upon hours by ourselves, no parental guidance at all. Yeah. You know, it was just a different time, man. It was a different time. But, no, that's fun to reminisce and talk about that stuff and, you know, tell stories, you know.
Yeah, man. Well, I got one more story about my dad that I remember that's always been really hilarious to me, and from when he was a little kid. And you know, unfortunately, part of the fact that my dad passed away so early on, I have a lot of personal memories, but I don't have a lot of the really funny stories and stuff. My brother knows more and has more. I need to talk to my Uncle Larry and maybe get some more personal history stories. But I do remember that when my dad was about 7 years old, part of his job growing up, or part of being a kid growing up on a farm, is, you know, you had chores. Yeah. One of his chores was to go out every morning and get the eggs from all the chickens. So one morning he goes out and he's getting the eggs, and he's seven, so he's little, you know, and he's got the basket and he's getting all the eggs from the chickens, and a rooster sees him, jumps up on top of his head, and just starts crazy picking his head, just hammering with its beak on his head like he's trying to dig into the dirt, like you see him over and over and over again. Scared the crap out of my dad, because one, he's getting attacked by this bird who's, you know, when you're a little kid, you know, that bird, a rooster is going to be pretty close to your size, so you know that would be like a large dog to you now. So and it's on his head and it's pecking him and it's hurting and scared him and he's crying and he runs inside, he's all and my, you know, of course my grandma Lodima, she calms him down and everything. And then from that day forward, my dad would go to, every time he'd go and get the eggs, he would pull his 4-year-old little brother out with him, and he would send Uncle Larry inside.
Use him as protection.
He made him do it. He made his little brother get
out the eggs. There you go. First round of defense. There you go, man. Oh, that's hilarious.
I just remember another one. This is a great one from my dad when he was little and living out on the farm. He came, he was probably in middle school, and I think his Uncle Larry was in elementary school. And he came home, and Uncle Larry and one of their cousins were out behind the house, and they had a hammer and a shotgun shell. And they're taking that hammer.
Oh, no.
Bam, hold it. One of them was holding the hammer, one of them was holding the shell, trying to hit it, and they were, you know, and it didn't go off. Of course, my dad, who's the older brother, he comes back, he goes over there, he's like, oh, what are you doing here? Give me that. And he turns it, you know, it's a ball peen hammer, and he turns around, it's like, you got to use this side. And so he starts, like, he's getting ready to do it. And then my grandpa, who was, you know, my grandpa, B.B. Clyde, was like, he was a very hard working Christian man, farmer. If you ever saw the famous American Gothic painting of the farmer and his wife,
exactly,
totally my grandparents, but that guy really looked like my grandpa.
Yes, absolutely.
My grandpa comes over there. He sees what my dad's doing. My dad fortunately didn't, you know, get through enough to like even take a good swing at it. And my grandpa gets him. And of course, my dad is the one who gets into trouble because he's the one caught red-handed with a shotgun shell and a ball-peen hammer.
So. I got him back from sending his brother into the hen house.
Yeah, dude.
That's hilarious.
That is good.
That's great, man.
Hey, everybody, you're listening to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. You probably knew that already because you're listening or downloaded to the episode off of your iTunes or your Spotify or whatever place you get your podcast from. We want to thank you for listening. We also want to remind you to like us, follow us, subscribe to us, make sure that you get your new podcast episode every week. We'd also like to ask you to rate and review so that we can grow our audience and we can have more friends, we can have more stories. So thanks for listening to What's Your Weird Story. Hey, Barry.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a goat sucker?
What?
Goat sucker. Chupacabra.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever seen one of those?
I haven't seen one personally, but I've heard about them.
Yeah, me too. If anybody's got a goat sucking story, wait, if you got a goat sucker story, we want to hear it. If you got a Bigfoot story, we want to hear it. If you got a Loch Ness Monster story or a Lake Champlain story or Ogopogo story or an Oingo Boingo story, wait, that was an 80s band. Anyway, you got a weird cryptid story, we want to hear it.
I didn't even know what a cryptid was, man.
Yeah, dude, cryptids. They're like the animals that haven't been necessarily proven by science. They're the ones on the edge. You know, they're not necessarily known animals, but they're known animals. We don't have the bodies or anything like that. So they're kind of like half myth, half story, based in reality, but still in that weird mystery area that we don't know about yet. Cryptids are fun.
So guys, I brought my sister, my beautiful oldest sister. She set the bar high in our family. Unfortunately for me, I had to live up to her smart ways and try to follow that. No, she was gracious enough to give some time to us, and I wanted to bring her on because, you know, we were telling stories about our folks, and she's got some great stories about my dad, and because there are so many, I couldn't remember a lot of them, so I wanted to bring her on and see what we could drum up here. So, without further ado, my sister Brooke.
Hi guys.
Hey.
What's up?
Hey, Brooke.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Good to see you. I'm actually not the smart sister. My younger sister,
well,
the middle child, is the smart.
She worked hard at her smarts.
Yes, she did.
You just have natural smarts. So.
You know, and it was, you know, Barry, I love that early on, Barry just realized that there was no competition and gave up. So he just followed his own path.
That's right.
I mean, same with my older brother, you know, I couldn't keep up with Lane. So
I understand. Barry and I have always had a great relationship, though. I think we're far enough apart in age. There's a 5-year difference.
Yeah.
We were always really close. We never fought. Yeah, that's not the same story for he and Jamie. They they had their moments, but so Barry and I have always had a really close relationship, and I'm lucky that he moved back to Enid. Oh gosh, when was it? 10 years ago?
No, it was freaking 15 years ago.
No, it was not. Okay, well, anyway,
yeah, isn't that crazy? 2004. Yes. Yeah.
So we've had the opportunity for our kids to be raised together, and our parents are here in the same town, which is great because we didn't grow up with grandparents this close by. So
yeah, it's great. It's great. So I told some stories about Dad, and you know, people kind of have an understanding a little bit about how crazy he is because we've done some other stories on the podcast, But do you remember, what story sticks out to you? I mean, do you have something that that you think about whenever you think about him?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely. Okay. This story just is my dad in a nutshell. It says a lot about my mom, too. So this was probably, I'm going to say, 10 years ago. So it's not anything about aging or anything. This is the way he's always been.
Yeah.
He had been working out in the yard all day. He loves to work outside, landscaping, mowing, you know, cutting down limbs, whatever. He'd been out all day. It was a Sunday afternoon. He came in early in the evening, took a shower. And as soon as he got out of the shower, my mom had dinner ready. So he throws on a t-shirt, underwear, and that's it. And when I say underwear, probably either tidy whities or boxer briefs. He's never worn boxers.
Yeah, that's true.
So they were some sort of snug.
Yeah.
Snug underwear.
Yeah.
So they eat dinner and they were in the process of either buying a house or selling a house. I can't remember. And their realtor called and said, "Hey, can you run down to my office real quick? I have some paperwork I need you to sign." They say, "Sure." So they jump in the car and they go down to the realtor's office and they talk with the realtor and she says, "Just a minute. I'm going to go make some copies of these for you." And she leaves the room. And my dad looks over at my mom and says, "Sue." And she said, "What?" And he said, "I don't have any pants on." And she said, "What?" And she looked over and he had on a t-shirt, underwear, and Crocs. Oh my God. And I don't know what's worse, that he left the house with no pants on or that my mom didn't even notice.
Oh, man. Pants on. I'm surprised that got past you. I'm surprised that got past your mom. But I guess, like, just the fact that he's at least got a top on. And
To her defense, he does wear oversized shirts. So
yes, he does, but not that big. So I guess the realtor came back in the room and I forget what her name was, but he said, "So-and-so, have you ever had anyone come to a meeting with no pants on?" She said, "I don't believe I have." And he said, "Well, you can't say that anymore."
Oh, man. Oh, that's so great.
Another great thing about your dad is that he will fully own whatever the situation is. You know,
100%.
So there's
He's
that.
So, any excuses for it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
Did he excuse himself?
He what?
Did he excuse himself and get some pants or did he stay
for the meeting? I'm sure they finished their business. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's not going to embarrass him at all.
No. Yeah. No. He probably walked around the office after they were done and shook everybody's hand.
Oh, gosh. I have a more recent.
Okay.
Very recent, actually.
Okay.
Dad, he always had the big gap between his front teeth, and just as he's gotten older and stuff, his teeth got very brittle and they kept chipping, like his front teeth. So he decided to get veneers on his front teeth. Yeah. So he goes to the dentist, and you know, it's not a very pretty process when they prep your teeth for veneers. They basically just grind them down to little nubs that the veneers are glued to. Mm-hmm. And so he went and they give you some temporaries while they are making your permanents. And but his problem was they will not stay on his teeth. They fall off. For no reason.
Yeah.
And but it doesn't stop him from like talking to anyone. And these are his front teeth that are like literally little nubs. So I started a new job a year and a half ago, and I worked in the basement of the office building of the bank that I work at. And there are probably 30 to 40 people that work down in the basement, and it's not off limits to the public, but there's very little other than the people that work there. There's just people from the outside don't come down there. And he had come down one time and seen my office. And then a few months later, I was sitting at my desk working and it's really quiet down there. And all of a sudden I hear his voice and he is yelling my name, Brooke. And he's wandering around the basement of the bank looking for me, but he can't remember where my office is. So he's just yelling my name and wandering around. And my first thought was, oh my gosh, I hope his veneers haven't fallen off. And he's walking around with no front teeth looking for me.
Yeah, yeah. Brooke, there's some homeless man that I had a guy call me one time. He was a friend of mine, and we were doing a we're supposed to bid a job for him, and Dad had come over to bid it, and he called me up and he goes, "Do you have like this old guy with no teeth that works for you?" And I'm sitting here thinking, what? It was, yeah, some guy that said that he belonged to your company came up to my house and I couldn't understand what was going on. He had no front teeth. And I'm like, and then I put it together after I hung up with the phone. It was my dad. He lost the veneers that day. Oh man. And he did that. Like it took him like, a few months for them to actually get the right teeth in. I mean, he would lose them on a daily basis. Like you show up and there's no teeth. You're like, oh,
well. They went to Red River on vacation and he lost them. And Mom said she wanted to crawl under a rock because he kept talking to people with no teeth.
You could have a lot of fun with that, I think.
Oh yeah. That's great. And then you were talking about the and I totally forgot about this also, but his mugshot.
Yes.
So he
has a framed photo. It's a mugshot from when he was 18. He has it in his house, and I think the story is he sold someone a vehicle, and they refused to pay him for it, so he went and found him and beat him up and got arrested. And who bailed him out? I can't remember if it was.
I think it was grandma. I thought it was like grandma that not.
I feel like it was someone from mom's side of the family that bailed him out. But that is one of his claims to fame. Is he has a mugshot.
He's got a big shit-eating grin on his face too.
Yes.
He's smiling big, and he's holding the picture. He's holding his number up. And he's smiling big. And one of his friends is the county clerk now. It wasn't that her that found it? That found it for him? Because she was digging through old records and then found it. And then she framed it for him for his birthday and brought it to him. It's great.
That is awesome.
So great. So
no great. Shame.
No. Absolutely hilarious. Oh, man. Okay, what else? You got another one?
Goodness gracious.
I mean, there's lots we talked before. There's lots of fire stories. I mean, he caught fire to everything.
Yes.
But
the most accident prone.
Oh my
God. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen to him. He decided to fry fish one time, and I think he had borrowed this fish fryer, and it was like a little trough that was, I think it was, must've been gas fueled propane or something. And he started frying fish on the side of the house, but it was right up against the house, and that trough caught on fire. And it was, the flames were huge, and we were all swimming. And he is screaming, "Sue, call the fire department." And I can't believe, I think we got it out before the fire department actually got there, but oh gosh, things like that. Yeah. He fell off a ladder at work, face planted.
We talked about the ladders.
Yeah.
He fell out of a tree when he was young and jacked his arm up, and we told that story. He got kicked in the face. Did you know he got kicked in the face when he was like 4 or 5 years old by a horse?
Horse, yes. Yeah. Someone here in town actually told me the other day that they witnessed him at probably 5 or 6 years old ride a bicycle off of the roof of a house.
There you go. Yeah. he never fears anything. He doesn't have that part of your brain that is like tells you not to do something. He doesn't have it.
He's also surrounded by people who and this is this reflects on his character as someone who is, you know, good and that, you know, and enjoyable by so many people and well liked, that he's still alive. to for all of these things to have happened to
him. He's
surrounded by people.
100%
Maintains existence.
But in all seriousness, I will say he is one of truly the best people I will ever know. He has such a servant's heart and absolutely believes the good in every single person, even the people that probably don't deserve that benefit of the doubt. He has been an exceptional father. He is a great grandfather. He loves our mother, and I just am so fortunate to be raised by him. I mean, there's never been a dull moment. That's for certain.
That's cool.
Absolutely true. Well, thank you so much.
I'm 48 years old. Let me tell one more story. I'm sorry. I'm 48 years old, and my dad, every couple of weeks, will call me in the middle of the day just to tell me that he always says, I just wanted you to know that I'm loving you today. I just want... I want to make sure that you know that. And, is that Joe? Yeah. and don't ever forget it. And those phone calls I will always cherish for sure.
He's the best. Absolutely the best. Awesome, Brookie. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi guys. It was
good
so great
to see you.
Good to talk to you. I love your show.
Thank you, Brooke.
Oh, thanks.
All right. Bye guys.
Bye.
Right, take care.
Hey, that's a nice t-shirt you got on there.
Oh, thanks, dude. It's brand new. Do you like that? It's one of the official What's Your Weird Story t-shirts.
Where'd you get that?
It's funny that you ask. I just got it off the brand new Spreadshirt.com site for the What's Your Weird Story podcast. There's no www. You just go straight to shop.spreadshirt.com/ what's without the apostrophe, WHATS hyphen YEO. WEIRD-STORY, and that'll take you right there.
I mean, you can never own enough clothing.
Well, that's true, Barry. There's t-shirts for the ladies, because, you know, they're cut differently. There's hoodies, which are really cool. There's two different kinds of hoodies, and there's also tote bags, so you can tote your stuff.
That's so cool, man.
So if you guys go out to spreadshirt.com, What's Your Weird Story, currently there are two designs, but there will be more going up very soon. So just keep your eyes out for that. And if you decide to get one of our shirts, tag yourself on Instagram to ours or Facebook. Show your love. Show us what you got. Let's see your true colors.
Those stories were fun. And again, a story can't encapsulate exactly what someone means to you, but we tried to at least shed a little light on some little highlights of our lives. And we got great memories.
Definitely. All right. Well, so that's the past. Those are our memories. That's what we grew up with. But we are not going to leave you completely without some Weirdsville kind of stories. There's been a fairly recent developing story that our special correspondent has brought to our attention. And it is within his field of expertise. So why don't you go into that, Mr. Hubbard?
All right. Well, you know, I'm kind of kicking myself for not really looking into this a little more than I have before now. So what we've got is we had a gentleman make an open records request of the FBI for the results of a 15 hair with a small patch of skin sample of, unidentified biological remains that could possibly have been Bigfoot, that was submitted to the FBI for analysis in, I think, the early 1970s.
Oh, wow.
Right? Mm-hmm. So this is kind of a big story, but really I think that it's a big story in that the FBI did actually take the time to analyze these hairs to see if they could determine that if they are from a known species, right?
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it's kind of a big story without a big, you know, climax
here
at the end, because the FBI determined that these hairs were of an origin of the Deer family, right? So I don't know if these hairs were found on a fence. It kind of almost seems like maybe it was a barbed wire fence crossing, because to have a small patch of hair with, you know, a little bit of skin attached, it would have been something that would have nicked it out.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then for you to find that, you know, hanging on a barbed wire fence would be a good place to find it. But anyway, you also, what kind of did intrigue me about the story as kind of being non-story, you know, was that, you know, we didn't really, DNA testing wasn't really a thing until the early 90s, right? I remember, I can't remember what the first case was or whatever with DNA testing.
I remember the first time hearing about it was during the O.J. Simpson trial for me personally. But I know that at that time, it's still the science wasn't quite where it was going to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very intrigued by this, you know, to understand, you know, to learn that they could do this and that they had had done it. So I don't know what these hairs, you know, who knows? I don't know why these guys were really pushing these particular hairs, but I wonder if they still had them.
Yeah.
And if they
could be retested or
did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Could they retest them at this point? So
interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I know, because I saw this pop up in my news feed as well, and the guy who sent it in is a Bigfoot researcher or a squatcher or whatever.
Peter Byrne, is that his name?
I think it's something like that. So he's somebody who's kind of well-known in the community. And like you said, this was like, he found this stuff like in the late 60s or early 70s. So it was a while back. But I don't recall if it was like on a barbed wire fence or if it was on a tree or something like that. But he sent it in, and the fact that, you know, they did it, you know, regardless.
Yeah.
You know, is pretty interesting. And the fact that they released they just did some disclosure and released some stuff is also very interesting, because also within the past couple of weeks of recording this, the Navy has been doing a lot of UFO encounter disclosures where they've been saying, okay, well, this was spotted here and there. And I haven't done a lot of research into that either. But, you know, it's just some interesting time for whenever.
Right. And it kind of leads you to believe, this conspiracy theorist in me, when I look at the government being forthcoming about things like this, but there being basically nothing to the story, makes you kind of question why even come out and talk about it if there's no, like, is it a way of trying to throw people off and just saying, well, you know, here you go, this is a evidence obviously of some deer, you know, so there's no story, because there's a lot of especially with the UFO stuff, man. I was listening to a podcast not too long ago. Adam, you might have listened to it. The last podcast on the left, guys, did a little story on the UFO sightings from the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was all, basically, it was all stuff that went on within the Royal Air Force. And these are all higher-up people that are reporting this stuff happening. A lot of times that information gets squashed for whatever reason, you know, you know, so why come out with a story about a file that somebody has put away when the conclusion is there is no conclusion, there's no definitive explanation for what this is, and we're just going to put it out there to make it seem like we've actually looked into this and made people think that we're on the up and up here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, disinformation is a thing. It's part of psychological warfare.
Right.
I try not to stand too much on that conspiracy theory kind of ledge, because you can get sucked in really quickly.
Of course.
And into bad places, and it can warp your mind. 100%. You know, but it seems, you know, we know that in the past there have been psyops and other projects that our own government has given us incorrect information or false you know, information right. or lied about, you know. And I understand, especially with UFOs and stuff like that, especially during the Cold War, when we saw a lot of these, you know, that's when it first early started popping up and being noticed, how you would want to tell people that, no, it was swamp gas, it was a balloon, right. a weather balloon, it was all these things, but, you know, because you don't want people to know that maybe it's the Soviets flying over us.
Exactly.
You know, because yes. we will say, oh, well, we've got planes that can do that
right.
and can fly over that stuff. Right. But we don't want the enemy to be seem like they're up with us, right. especially since, you know, the Soviets, you know, beat us into space with Sputnik, you know, right. the, you know, and with the cosmonauts and all that stuff. Right. So, you know, I mean, right. that. To me, seems like I understand why there was a lot of closed books in closed accounts and non-disclosure of information and disinformation spread during that time period. Because also, you know, I mean, if you say we don't know what it is, it's, you know, something a lot of people saw or experienced. We can't explain it, or we found something and we don't want to tell you because, you know, it's not going to be good for morale. It's not going to be good for the country. It's not going to be good for society as right. they deem, you know, because they do. I mean, I'm not trying to get so much into control, you know, as far as like a shadow government or anything like that. But they definitely want people to be happy. They want people to be fairly productive.
Of course.
They want people not to revolt. Right.
Exactly.
They don't want people to try exactly. and get power. They don't right. want people to challenge the right. position of power.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's anybody in power of whatever. Yes. You're in power of.
Yeah.
You don't want the group. You don't want the masses to turn against you
right.
because you want to be able to be remain in power.
Right.
So,
right.
It all adds up. It all makes sense right. to me like that. But going back to where we started with this whole discussion, I don't understand or know why the FBI to begin with would test for a Bigfoot kind of thing. It seems, you know, out of their jurisdiction, you know, for any kind of anthropological, that really got tied up on my tongue, but you know what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Any kind of thing that's not, you know, necessarily human related, crime related.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, unless they do have a legitimate kind of X-Files group within them, but it doesn't make sense to me that they would test it. And it makes even less sense that they would like announce it or make some kind of disinformation about a Sasquatch or
yeah, anything like that. Yeah, the whole thing is weird. I mean,
really is.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah, it fits right in.
It's strange because you get Bigfoot keeps popping up in the news. You know, like there's that politician that, you know, was into the Bigfoot erotica, and there's, you know. And then there's this, so who knows, man, maybe there's something else going on that's bigger in the world, that's a bigger problem.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's a reason why we are being told that the FBI discovered that there wasn't this
right.
one big, because
right right
look over here, because, you know, I mean, that's how a magician does stuff, misdirection. Look over right. here to see yeah. where the coin was. It came out of your ear, so yeah. you don't see me taking it out of your pocket. So
for sure.
I don't,
yeah.
It's so, true.
Well, regardless, it's a good story. And
yeah, thanks.
And also, hey, listen, I want to just say I remain a skeptic, and I'm not saying that either way that, you know, this does or doesn't exist, but
oh, yeah.
I just don't buy some of the stuff that comes out, you know, that the government sort of pushes out there, mainly because I'm pretty anti-government, but mm-hmm. I'm just skeptical about anything, any information that's fed to us. Mm-hmm. That's really where the concern comes from. It's not that I'm like, oh, you know, every story about every Bigfoot and every UFO sighting is legitimate. I'm not saying that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. But I mean, you know, it's definitely good not to do, regardless of the source.
Yeah.
It's definitely good not to just accept everything that you're told, because if you do that, man,
yeah.
then you are just going to be right. so directionless, and you know, because everybody's going to be pushing you every which way, and right. then you're just right. not going to know what to think, and you know, so you have to, you know, apply your own critical thinking,
right.
apply your own research and your own knowledge and stuff like that, but you know, the main point of it all, and with this, within the context of our podcast, is we really like hearing these stories that people have personally experienced.
That's right.
And so we can hear their experiences and enjoy the story, and we can, you know, we don't need to go any further than an investigation. We can just enjoy what we've been told and laugh and everything. So be entertained is right. what it is.
And that's that's what we do. And that's, we don't try to pretend to be anything else. We enjoy the stories. We enjoy the entertainment. We want to be able to provide a platform for people to come on and share those experiences and just have some fun. And we appreciate everyone that's come on. And next week, we're going to have another great story for you. We're going to get back to it. We're going to continue sort of pushing those your own borders and your own horizons up a little bit and out. And we're going to continue doing what we do. And we appreciate you guys tuning in every week and being a part of this and helping us grow this thing and getting the word out.
All right, everybody. Be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.